You are listening to The Mombcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 233rd episode, we'll talk about this week's comics, maybe have a bit of an awkward middle bit. The awkward middle bits are getting longer and more awkward. In his spotlight, his special library extravaganza spotlight, it isn't from the library, I take all that back, I'll edit it out. James will be talking about Boxers and Saints by Jean Luen Yang. Around the mic tonight are...
James.
And Nick. It's more of a table, we've each got a mic.
We have, yeah. They're around the mics... tonight, and a table, a couple of computers. It's nice. It's a nice studio. You should come and join us, listener.
For all intents and purposes, it's all going into one stream, though. Yeah. So around the mics suggests that we have two tracks and we can fidget about. And I guess the listener doesn't really care.
I mean, if you want to be incentivized, Tim, lovely Tim Swan, came down and did it with us. And a really enjoyable episode. Enjoyed that definitely more than I enjoy doing them when it's just you and me.
That's true.
Yeah, I would say the testosterone is choking, but it is you and me, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's mostly estrogen. But if you come down, you did it with us, not only would you get to meet us, which is admittedly, you know, you can probably meet feckless idiots in the city you live, but... Yeah.
I'm sure they have them.
But with Tim, we went out, we had a lovely Bella Italy. You can watch a fat man eat a calzone picante, a Diavolo.
I wasn't there.
No, that was brilliant. And we went for ice cream afterwards. Southampton has more ice cream parlours per capita than any other city in the Western Hemisphere.
Come and guest on Momcast. You can do it with us.
Yeah. Come and guest on Momcast and have a cheap Italian meal and an ice cream.
But if you can't actually...
You have to pay for it yourself.
If you can't actually do it with us, at the very least you could put something in James's mouth. Which is the nearest thing we get to sponsorship or promotion. If you've got something you want to promote, a comic or a website or anything, or you just want to hear a gigantic idiot spout words out of your own fair mouth.
Maybe you've done an exercise video on YouTube, or maybe you've sewn a towel to a kitten's back.
Maybe you have started doing a podcast about the hit 80s detective show Magnum.
Who the fuck would do a podcast just about the hit 80s detective show Magnum? If you were going to do it about any detective, you would do it about the father and son team of the Foxes in the series, hit series Crazy Like a Fox, surely?
Maybe you would. I mean, it was just a hypothetical. I don't know if anyone would actually do that.
It sounds like the sort of thing that a feckless northern get would do.
But... any of those things, if you want James to promote it for you, you can send him roughly a minute's worth of copy. Copy is what they call words in advertising,
which according to the source I had is about a page of A4.
Yeah. And you can give him direction and notes. You can say, I want him to sing this like a chunky man who supports Saints, the football team.
I'm going this weekend. Oh, that's the end.
Where are
of the
you
show,
going?
To the football.
All right, okay. Or any of those things, basically. Or, like, I want him to do it in a slightly offensive American accent.
Yeah, or, I can do that.
Yeah, he can do everything. He's like our improv genius.
That's right.
He's like our improv genius in a bottle.
Thank you very much, Nick. That's very nice you to say so it says here.
If you ever meet a genie... And it starts to turn a bit nasty, what you need to say to him, because they're fiercely prideful, is you say to him, I do not believe that you used to fit in that vase. And when he goes, well, what are you talking about? You saw me come out of it. You say, oh, no, I had something in my eye. I think you should try and go in that vase. I do not believe a fat lump like you can fit in that vase.
Yeah.
And then when he eventually, his ego gives up, jump in, and he jumps back in there. As soon as he's in there, put the stopper in the top.
Yeah. Throw him in the water.
Yeah. Yeah. Because genies aren't like droopy dog.
That's true.
They won't just come back all the time. If you stick them in, they're someone else's problem thousands of years hence.
If you want to be with a genie, you got to rub them the right way, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah, you do. Yeah. If you're ever going to a door and there are two twins there blocking the door, and one of them says, "Ah, I am the twin and I always lie," and the other one says, "I am the twin and I always tell the truth." There's a way of getting past them as well, but I can't remember what it is right now.
And there's that one about the hairdressers, the one with a good haircut and the one with a bad haircut, and you go to the one with a bad haircut.
Because they're the one who does the good haircuts.
Exactly.
That's really clever, I didn't know about
that. Yeah, both of my hairdressers have got really bad haircuts. I hold them.
They probably get it done somewhere else. You get your haircut.
Once a month.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is that didn't happen for the first 4 years of the Momcast.
No, you just had no hair.
5 years this year.
I think that having the hair makes you look a bit younger.
Do we get something from the government for doing 5 years?
We get sectioned.
We should do. We should probably get like something from BAFTA.
Yeah, sectioned. We'll get sectioned by BAFTA.
Cease and desist.
So you can put something in James's mouth. I think I'm doing the admin stuff now. You can also listen to all of our past episodes.
We didn't tell anyone the email.
I'll do that in a minute.
All right.
You can also
get a pen, Andy.
You can also listen to all of our past episodes and look at all the show notes, which are normally quite thorough, unless I'm having a particularly bad day, in which case I just don't do anything.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if people read it or anything. It's mainly my OCD kicking in that makes me do those show notes in the first place.
Well,
anyway,
thank God for your OCD.
So you can look at those. They're on the website, which is at...
Oh, that's momcomics.com.
Absolutely.
Oh, you keep me on my toes.
I'm changing it up.
You are keeping me on my toes.
You can listen to all of those episodes there for free, is a thing that James likes to say.
They are for free, although if we try to charge for them, I think karma would... We'd be eaten by crocodiles almost instantly.
That isn't how karma works.
Yes, it is.
That's how instant karma
works.
Well,
how did Captain Hook end up with a hook, then, if karma doesn't work like that?
Bad luck, coincidence. Once you start believing in karma that happens straight away, you might as well start believing in fairies.
To be fair, that is my source material, though.
Yeah. Peter Pan is your source material.
Oh, no, I was thinking about Tinkerbell and the... Do you know, some very clever Easter eggs in Tinkerbell and the Pirate Fairy.
Really?
In terms of who the young, dashing pirate is that fools the Pirate Fairy into working for him.
Is it Hook?
Nod, nod, wink, wink. Oh, I don't like crocodiles.
Is it Hook? Are you spoiling a children's cartoon?
I couldn't tell you because nothing is ever explicitly said.
Oh, that's quite cool. I like that sort of thing.
Go and check it out. I tell you, wink, wink, nod, nod. Oh, I don't like croc. I don't think there's a young Smee in it, which annoyed me though.
You can also talk to us about Tinkerbell's pirate fairies and anything else you want to talk to us about the show, about anything else. You can leave us comments on the site.
Yeah.
If you want to, but you can also email us. You can email us at
momcast@gmail.com.
That'll be where you need to send your put something in James's mouth thing. Also, if you've got any 2 to 5 minute audio contributions about comics or related comic-y stuff, you can send that to the same address, which is
momcast@gmail.com.
We will almost definitely put it in the show if it isn't completely rubbish. And once you've listened to the rest of the show, you'll get a sense of where our level for completely rubbish is.
Momcast, setting the bar low since 2009.
Since I've been being arch about the contributions, they've tailed right off. Do you think that people don't get that I'm joking? We're really grateful whenever we get them. We love hearing from other people.
I think we've tapped the well dry. I mean, people are fed up with our ingratitude,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it takes us a really long time to get back to people and thank them and stuff as well.
It is.
We need to work on that.
Not just on this podcast.
We will never enhance our brand to the level at which it would best benefit, et cetera.
If you've sent us an email for any of our shows, by all means feel free to email us again and go, seriously, guys.
Yeah.
You could reply, and one of us would do it then out of guilt.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is really the only way to motivate
really
me.
It really is the best way to motivate James or I. Jane isn't here this week.
No, she thought she was going to finish her book, And unfortunately, it's Gummy Bears and My Adventures in the Unicorn Forest.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't quite finished it yet because she apparently has to go back to Gummy Bear, the Gummy Bear Woods, and just interview a couple more of her gingerbread relations.
Right, okay.
Or something, I don't know.
That's pretty distressing. It's horrible when you get a last-minute surprise like that. She probably thought she was nearly done with it.
Yeah, she did, but I think, you know, her publisher's unreasonable.
Stupid publishers.
Well, you know, they're giving her this big break. Look out for that. That will be available in imaginary stores near you very soon.
What have you been up to this week, James?
Well, I've had a cold. I felt really poorly this week. I'm not on my best, Nick.
If you want to hear how bad James's cold was, you should listen to the episode of Two Grown Men from Monday of this week. I was not at my best because I hate Skype recordings, and James is not at his best because, really, he wanted to be dead.
I was borderline delusional. I was losing the plot at that point. That was the longest period I'd been awake for about a day and a half at that point. So
the sheer amount of phlegm that I cut out edit was amazing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the sheer amount of phlegm I left on my headset that night was...
Oh.
After we'd finished talking, though, it's fine.
We got
some good administration done, though, afterwards.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it was
that's
good.
That's true. I think there's something going round.
Yeah, probably. It's a bowler, isn't it?
What have I been up to?
I don't remember asking you.
I haven't really been up to very much. We went to see my sister up in Peterborough. That involved lots of driving. Saw lots of the family, though. That was nice.
Oh, congratulations, by the way.
On what?
The other weekend.
What happened?
Peterborough won the Johnson Paint Trophy.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
You must be very happy.
I was there. Was that the weekend I was there?
No, and it's at Wembley as well, as you well know.
Oh, I don't know. Is this a football thing?
It is, but I know I went to see Southampton win the same trophy a few years ago, so it must have been a wonderful day out. 2010.
Have they won it since?
No, because it's only teams in the lower two leagues.
Have they won anything since?
Promotion to the top flight and people's respect for their style of football.
That's pretty good. You are looking at me as if I am somehow picking at you, but I genuinely don't know.
No, I was just very pleased with myself. I was able to provide answers.
No, that's good. And I've been a bit disoriented and delirious. The good thing about when I'm disoriented and delirious and I know that James is sitting at home being sick is I get him to do things like the mailing list for the Two Grown Men.
I really enjoyed doing that. It was about 1,500 words all told. And I enjoyed the process. It allowed me to work out some issues I was having with Worcester Sauce and my next-door neighbour.
And your wife.
Yeah, my wife, yeah. But I don't write as much as I would like to, although I've written more recently, and maybe if Nick will allow me, I want to maybe talk about another project we might be doing, if you're allowing me to talk about it on here. But I love writing. I do it too little these days. I love the cycle I go through. Right? I love the process of writing. Really enjoy it. It can be frustrating sometimes, obviously. You know, we all get blocked, don't we? But I love that I love what I've written for about 5 minutes after I've sent it to wherever its final destination is. And then forevermore despise every single character of it with a burning passion, to the point now where I wanted to reread the email for the final bit where I make my plea. I can't read it. I physically can't read it because all I do is start picking holes in it. It's terrible.
Man, it was fine. I think the mailing lists are an interesting thing to write.
There's a recipe in there again.
Yeah, it was good. I really wanted to have the recipe in there.
It's really delicious.
We talked a very long time ago about potentially doing a mailing list for this as well. If people think that's something they'd like, they should definitely get in touch with us.
Oh, God, the work.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest problem. The biggest issue would be the work. But if you are someone who feels like they'd like to contribute to... just mombe, anything mombe, but you don't want to be doing a 2 to 5 minute bit of audio each
week.
Maybe
we could make it bi-weekly or something.
We could definitely do a people writing for the site.
Oh, that'd be nice. If you'd like to write for the site,
because at the moment,
fantastic.
Only John really gets the time. He wrote a review of Ryan K. Lindsay's...
Who?
John Mombe.
No, Ryan...
Ryan Lindsay. Ryan K. Lindsay?
Don't know him.
He's Australian.
He's lovely.
of his latest comic, which I really, really liked, and I can't remember the name of it. But anyway,
I almost feel like there's a few people we know whose development, their styles and their like career through comics are almost feeling twined with part of the narrative of our podcast as we've done it. David's definitely one. George and Ryan, without a shadow of a doubt, sort of definitely all three of them, sort of right from the beginning, sort of seem to be entwined with.
I think what you're trying to say, James, is they owe it all to us.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, no, but I mean, it's a valid point.
Yeah, maybe Ryan, but
no, I don't think any of them do. If it was anything to do with us, we'd be successful too.
No, I just mean that because we've become intertwined, obviously. I take no credit for anything anyone's ever done, ever. Except my daughter. I take credit for everything she's done until she starts making bad decisions.
Which she will, almost definitely, yeah, because
that's the other podcast.
Do. Yeah.
Apparently.
There's also our Twitter feeds. I think we've mashed up. I've completely mashed up the admin and the hour.
I'm
weeks.
Loving it. I'm really enjoying it.
We're really
it. Free,
freeballing it now that it's literally all balls in the office.
We haven't
in the office in the kitchen.
Jane's not.
Where are we?
Yeah. Wherever you want to be, lover. Oh, it is odd now. Jane's not here to. She really generally keeps us on track, doesn't she?
Yes. Yes, she does.
Bless her. Oh, no, that's not. Blessy, that's patronising it. Say
that's
bless.
Really patronising. Why would you even?
I like it. I've got a couple of friends who...
you have got a couple of friends. Yeah, I've met them.
I like it. Who use the phrase, and I do this, before they're about to really lay into someone and pick holes in their character, say, oh, yeah, so-and-so, bless them, and then just enter into a character assassination.
Not being funny.
Yeah.
It's another one I like that when people say that.
All of my behaviours. It's not good.
Shall we talk about this week's comics? I've burned out on talking about our weeks and stuff.
Yeah, well, you didn't let me finish. I mean,
oh,
I
no,
did
go
all
on,
sorts
you
of
tell
I did all sorts of fascinating things this week, but no, we're a comic review show, Nick, so I'll take one for the team.
No, I want to know.
No, that really, I don't have anything to say. I was trying to move the show along. I was trying to be a smart ass about it.
You were just being horrible to me.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, cool.
I'm going to have another coughing fit in a minute. You know that's going to happen, don't you?
Okay, I'm going from my notes anyway, though, so I should be able to retrace anything. So, comics I got this week. The first one, I want to only talk about briefly because, again, I'm not entirely sure how you get hold of it if you weren't on the Kickstarter or Indiegogo thing, but I'll find a link and I'll put it on the site. It's a comic called Broken Telephone. It's the second part of it. I think the deal was, because it all happens such... This is the problem with Kickstarter in comics, is quite often you commit to... You pitch in on something that you're not actually going to see until you've forgotten it even exists. But it's something that I was quite interested in. It's all written by one person, but it's a different artist each chapter. And the term broken telephone is the slightly less, well, completely less racist name for what we more commonly know of as Chinese whispers. Which is that someone says something and then the next person doesn't quite hear it properly, and so the story goes on from there. I think that model or idea is incorporated into how this story has been told as well, but because it's the same writer, it's kind of difficult to know exactly. It's written by a chap called Ryan Estrada, and this chapter has art by Brittany Sabo. What? You were going to say Spears, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, yeah.
No, Brittany Sabo. Yeah, Brittany's quite a common name, I think, in America. Not so much over here.
And in France.
Someone tweeted the other day about how... I'm not saying I live on a middle-class street. Or no, the way I know I live on a middle-class street is that half the people on my street think that the new Russell Crowe film is about their child. And I didn't really know how to take that. Just a thing about naming there.
Sorry, that tickled me much more than it should have. I'm sorry, Nick.
But the first chapter was set in a call centre, and it was about someone... getting a call in this call centre, which has a really restrictive it's a really restrictive environment where they're only allowed to do the bare minimum to help people. And they get a phone call from this little boy who's stuck in this quite stressful situation. They hear gunshots going off and stuff like that. And that was the first chapter. This second one, it's a continuing story, but it shifts the focus so completely that it actually took me to the very back page where they had the little kid character who maybe was in trouble in the first story, like commenting on what had happened in that issue. It took until that point for me to really realize that these stories were connected. I don't think they were recurring characters, but it was really nice. It was a bit of a sneaky airport con going on, a little bit of a comment on security theater in an airport. And it was really a really canny piece of writing, really ably drawn in this scratchy, fluid style by Sabo. It's interesting. I think I don't know who's colouring it, if each artist is colouring their own, but I think that's going to be the unifying thing if it's ever collected in one book. It really interested to see where this was going. The characterization in the first chapter was great, and this one was a little bit more sneaky and knowing, sort of crimey, crime thrillery. I really like it. Manifest Destiny number 6, written by Chris Dingness with art by Matthew Roberts, and I think it's colour art by Owen Gienny. I think more and more I'm going to try not to talk too much about books that have been going on for a while, just because those books don't really necessarily need as much promoting.
If you would like Nick to carry on talking about those books, though, by all means, write that down. A piece of paper, screw it up, throw it out the window. It's not going to happen. I mean, it's, you know, but you can want that. It's fine.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm apparently not consistent. I keep having these ideas and then just doing what feels natural anyway.
I don't know why I felt the need to be so aggressive towards the listener.
I don't know what the hell's
going on.
I'm
sorry, listener. That's really provocative.
Why?
I don't know.
Why are you so mean?
I can't help myself.
Everyone thinks that you're the mean one. And I know that in reality, you're this big teddy bear, but whenever you get a mic in your face, you're like fucking Dennis Leary or someone equally... Howard Stern, but less funny.
I love that Dennis Leary was your go-to.
I know.
Dennis Leary or shit Bill Hicks, as I still like to call him.
But I want to mention Manifest Destiny number 6. It feels like, because I think there's a trade paperback coming out soon as well. This feels like the end of an arc. It's the weird period piece supernatural adventure story of Lewis and Clark's expedition that did happen, I think, but there are monsters in this one. It's got this real, it's not swashbuckling, but when I say adventure, that's really what it is. It isn't really a thriller. If it was a film from 20 or 30 years ago, Ray Harryhausen would probably be doing the monsters. It's that kind of a bunch of people on an expedition.
20 years ago.
20 years ago, was it?
20, is it? You reckon?
Did I say 20?
Yeah.
30. 40?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, God, this is where I'm going to listen back, and you said exactly the right date, and I got it wrong. This will be so embarrassing.
We're old. I think we're allowed to get confused. It's fine.
Yeah.
But this issue also hints at deeper secrets to the ongoing monster fest that's going on. Roberts, I really like the writing on it, but Roberts' art it's always reminded me of Tony Moore's art on the early Walking Dead comics. Well, Tony Moore's art all the time, but specifically I'm thinking of the early Walking Dead comics, because it seems like it'll be too crisp and cartoony for the subject matter, but actually that just accentuates every bit of gore and nastiness that happens. Because when you can see very clearly what's going on, when someone slashes at something, you actually see every piece of sliciness and nastiness. And the weird take they've got on zombie stuff in this is really, really good as well. I love it. Just want to talk about Iron Fist, the Living Weapon number 1, which is by Carr Andrews, art and writing. Even though I didn't feel as positively about it as I normally do about books I read, as I do about books I review, but I probably will keep buying it, and it's definitely worth a look if you like the comic form. It's a beautiful looking book. It's got incredible flow to the martial arts elements, specifically. Not so much in the action sequences. It's not so much a case of you see everything that's happening in the action sequences, but Carr Andrews is clearly very interested in the forms of martial arts and the way the body looks doing that stuff. And Carr Andrews has this really good design, eye to design and to lay out of a page and stuff like that. So that all comes through. But it's got the self-control and characterization of a 14-year-old boy. or of Frank Miller as he now appears distilled through our collective social conscience. I think I'll probably stick around for the sort of the hard core at the middle of it of Danny Rand as damaged human being. I do quite like Iron Fist, so it should be quite interesting. But it's really weird seeing this off the back of I haven't read the Matt Fraction Dave Eyer Iron Fist stories, but knowing what they're like on Hawkeye, I kind of want to, and this doesn't have any of that sort of humanity to it, really. It feels like a bit of a throwback to the early Image stuff, the really heavily rendered, beautiful, but sort of cold writing of Todd McFarlane on Spawn or something like that, or the very best and worst elements of Frank Miller in terms of how he lays out a page and how he tells a story. It's the best of Frank Miller's art, but the writing is kind of very reactionary and not very nice. In the back matter at the back of it, Carr Andrews, he sort of sings a hymn of praise of Steranko's comics from the 70s, I guess, the Nick Fury comics, I think. And he also wonders why in it that comics often divide labor between writer, artist, etc., because Steranko did all of that. And he's sort of saying that he's worked with some really great writers, but he couldn't do a book like this if he was part of a machine like that. And there's an element of truth like that to that. But I kind of think that books like this are why just having one person do the whole thing doesn't always work, because a good artist isn't always a good writer.
And this is why laissez-faire capitalism is always doomed to failure.
Yes. I don't know what you mean.
Because we're better in collective efforts than we are.
Yeah, okay.
That's what that's illustrating, Nick. That's what you're saying. You're making a political point, and I dig it.
Okay. I don't know if that's exactly what I was trying to
Definitely
say.
Definitely is, listener, okay. What Nick was saying.
But I mean, one example is it kind of feels like another writer would have found a way to write the one female character in it in a way that didn't make me think they don't really think very much of women, because she's clearly, there's a female character in it who is clearly there to demonstrate that Danny Rand is in a not a great emotional place. She's clearly there to show that he feels that this is a meaningless interaction that he has with her, but the way she actually talks and is written is incredible. It's kind of difficult to put into words. Someone will have to read it and write a long article about it, because I'm not capable. I start to feel a little bit dumb around the idea of sexual politics, just because people have treated me like I am. So I kind of,
if this shit fits, mate.
Yeah, but I felt like it didn't scan right to me, you know. Captain Marvel number 2, $3.99 from Marvel. It's written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by David Lopez. And I've written in my notes, what I've written mainly is, who takes their cat into space? But then it's, but actually it's kind of perfect, I've written. And also, her ship reminds me of the ship in Power Pack, which was, I think it was called Whitey, but it's sort of a similar design, all flowing lines and stuff. This is the story of Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, going out into space. The setup for why she was going out to space happened in the first issue, and this picks up the story. She's on a mission across space. She's, even before she had her superpowers, she was this hotshot pilot. So she's quite enjoying being behind the controls of her spaceship. And we get a space battle very, very quickly. It's all very exciting. The choreography of the ships and the lasers and everything is really well done. There is a reason why the cat's in space with her. It isn't as dumb as I made it sound. It isn't just a reference to Alien, which literally just occurred to me now. that there's a cat inexplicably on the Nostromo, isn't there?
There is.
Also, the ship's AI is called Harrison, and the cat is called Chewy. Something's going on there. Those aren't particularly subtle references, no, but really. It kind of sets the scene. It makes you feel pretty good about what you're seeing. Yeah. It's quite nice. It's really great. I've talked in the past about how I don't really like, for the most part, I don't really like Marvel's cosmic stuff. It loses me once they get out into space. I like the more grounded stuff. And I really enjoyed the first issue, but the minute I realised she was going to be out in space most of the time, I didn't know how long I was going to be tuned into it. But it's really fun. Kelly Sue writes the hell out of Carol Danvers and the guests who turn up in this issue. I'm not going to say who, James, but you might quite like it.
Well, I can guess. I'm not going to say it then.
And it manages to introduce danger and fun and actual laugh-out-loud jokes, which never happens to me with comics at all. And Lopez handles it all beautifully. He's here. The facial expressions are great, but the action sequences are great as well. It's just a really good, fun comic. It's not going to be the unique shining moment in the progress in comics that Ms. Marvel is, which is just an amazing comic. But it's just this great spacefaring yarn. I've actually gone back and caught up on Kelly Sue DeConnick's run on Captain Marvel as well, and it's just all really good, Marvel superhero comics. It's interesting. It's very much a Marvel comic. She has very real relationships with people around her. The stories are quite grounded and character-centric rather than plot and mythology-centric. But Carol Danvers, and I didn't even know before I read these comics, I didn't know what her backstory was beyond the tiny way it intersects with the X-Men. But she's basically a DC. Her origin is straight out of DC Comics. She gets handed a magic legacy by a spacey magic legacy by it's really similar to Green Lantern, basically. So Kelly Sue is maybe the only creator that it feels right to me to use her first names. Normally I think it's good form to use someone's surname when you're talking about their work. But with Kelly Sue, that kind of feels like how you're supposed to refer
and,
to
and
her.
Also, sadly, with comics, there's so few female
writers.
So few female writers that we can probably name Gail.
Yeah. You know, although that'd feel
Becky.
Weird.
Becky. Yeah. You know exactly who these people are.
That's true.
And that's kind of sad.
Yes. Secret of Stop crying.
I'm all right now.
Secret Avengers 2, $3.99, written by Ailes Cott, with art by Michael Walsh and I think Matthew Wilson colouring. What I'm slightly worried about is Ailes Cott writes these really authentic feeling espionage-y mysterious comics when he's doing his creator-owned stuff. And he's bringing all of that quality and skill with him to all of these Marvel books, but he's doing an awful lot of them. And I'm kind of hoping he doesn't burn himself out. Because Marvel have a tendency when they realise you're going to do good work for them to give you as many books as you can take on and pitch for. That seems to be the case. And it'll be interesting to see what happens to him in the future. But so far, the stuff he's doing with them is great. Secret Avengers number 2 is lovely. Really like the first issue. It's a real riot. It takes the narrative feel of the Fraction and Aya Hawkeye book. But it makes an honest-to-God, all-things-to-all-people team book out of it, with all the action and drama and relationship stuff and comedy sass that you can get in a really good superhero team book. The team at the moment is Black Widow, Spider-Woman. Hawkeye isn't in the team, but he's in the comic. It's kind of weird. They keep commenting on that. And the weird Black Nick Fury and Agent Coulson, which is clearly that they've managed to put into the Marvel Universe alongside the original Nick Fury because those characters are familiar from the films. Even though the Nick Fury... In the comics, he's much younger than the character Samuel L. Jackson plays. So it doesn't really, if it's supposed to be representative, which it clearly seems to be, of that character, it's not quite working because he's much more of an action hero than at the beginning of his career than the Samuel L. Jackson version. And the other Nick Fury is still knocking about somewhere, I think. But also Maria Hill, who is head of S.H.I.E.L.D., and MODOK, who is super popular among nostalgic Marvel fans, and I've never really understood why, but I love him in this book. Okay. Maria Hill really brings the secret part to it, the espionage in there and the mystery. The reason I haven't picked up the other Secret Avengers comics in the past is because they've seemed to really focus on the spy stuff or the slightly darker, slower moving stories, whereas this has all the snap of a decent team book. It really clips along, but there's still this woman at the middle of it keeping secrets. And Elscott balances all of this stuff brilliantly. Walsh and Wilson make these beautiful, easy to scan pages that balance storytelling with inventiveness. The page layouts are never boring, but you can always tell exactly what's supposed to be happening. But there are some moments of absolutely lovely design, especially with the scenes with Nick Fury and Agent Coulson, because they're basically just talking to each other and stranded in space, which is where they were in the past issue. That's two guys talking to each other against the backdrop of space, just blackness, and they managed to make those pages just scan absolutely lovelily. I can even live with how ridiculous having this version of Nick Fury and an Agent Coulson is, because this book is just so good. And finally, I just want to talk about Avengers Undercover, which is the second iteration of the Avengers Arena comic I loved so much. I talked so much about Avengers Arena. This is one of the only Marvel books I bought this week that was $2.99. Written by Dennis Hopeless with art by Kevin Walker. It still looks gorgeous. It still reads really, really well. It's the story of the brutalized characters from Avengers Arena, which I recommend you read if it's available as a collection. They're all very young characters, and they got brutalized in that, and now we're dealing with the fallout from that. But what this story finds them in, it's set 3 months after Avengers Arena finished, and they're kind of famous because everyone knows what they went through. But this finds them in this weird underground city populated by the Masters of Evil. It's basically a place for supervillains to go. It's this whole underground city. Lots of humor comes out of that. There are lots of interesting supervillains invented solely for this, I think, that are a bit odd. But it's absolutely not what you'd expect from a book that has this premise of a bunch of teen heroes going. They go down there to try and rescue their friend who's gone completely post-traumatic stress disorder crazy and wants to kill Arcade. And what I really like about it is the supervillains in this are actually characters. They're not just... it's all a bit fun and throwaway, but they're not just supervillains the way supervillains normally exist, which is they exist to service... that they exist to be a foil to the good guy. So they don't tend to have... they don't tend to have character, really, that much. But the thing I like most about this book, all of the other books I was reading, even Captain Marvel, which does harken back to that sort of slightly soap opera-y superhero thing. And I don't mean soap opera as as a negative when I say it. Negative. I don't mean it as a negative.
Sorry, listener, Nick's been drinking very, very heavily since very early this morning.
Yes. And by this morning, he means my childhood. But in the back of my mind, reading all of these comics, I've been looking at how well crafted they are and how just generally the craft. And I've been thinking that is really great characterization. But I've been very aware that they're setting up arcs or... they're establishing certain characters in certain ways. I was recently talking to someone online about how maybe it was better when I was reading old X-Men comics and not thinking this is an old white guy sat in an office putting these words in these characters. I was literally just taking it as, you know, I knew that they weren't real. I knew that it was fiction. But at the same time,
protesting too much.
No, but I did love Kitty Pryde back then. But I wasn't thinking about the fact that it was written and drawn. I was thinking about what the characters were going through first, and then how well it was done, how well the story was told. This was the only comic I read this week where I didn't feel like I was being told this story. I just felt like I was watching these characters going about their stuff. And it's testament to how well Dennis Hopeless writes these teen characters. I think part of the reason why it felt that way is that probably the last time I read a book that was that had teen characters in the Marvel Universe like this was probably when I was that age, you know, when I was a lot younger. So maybe I'm locking into something that's familiar from then. But it's just so well crafted. Kevin Walker's so good at what he does by now. We know him from old 2000 AD, but he's just so good at the characterization and everything that's going on with these characters. And I don't know how this is going to go, but I just really like seeing these characters interact with each other. And we're trained to think in terms of arcs. And in the first run of this, Avengers Arena, it sets you up to think in terms of arc from the very beginning, because it's about this finite space that they're in. And in theory, this book can only last as long as they're on this particular mission. So that's kind of there, it's implied. But really, you just kind of feel like you're watching these characters handling their situation. I really like it. I think Dennis Hopeless is really good. I don't think he's necessarily ever going to get the sort of success he probably deserves, because he's not that flashy and he's not like out there selling himself incredibly well to the readership or anything like that, but he's just so good. And Kevin Walker's always been good. Kevin Walker is, I don't know if you really remember Kevin Walker. Kevin Walker did the old ABC Warriors painted stuff in 2000 AD when we were younger.
I do remember.
Oh God. And he did, I think, the last Strontium Dog story before they did the reboot. Not Strontium Dog, Rogue Trooper story before they did the reboot. Steve Dillon penciled it and he inked it, and it was this.
Sure.
His lines, man, his lines, they're amazing.
George Beedham!
Wah! Wah!
Scouse Drother!
Wah! Wah!
Hello, monkeys, it's George Beedham here, Drother of the Mighty Jambo at notregret.com/Jambo. I'm going to try and bash this out quickly because I'm on a break at work and somebody might catch me at any second. I just wanted to comment briefly on the return of three of my childhood heroes to the Marvel Universe. In Nightcrawler number one, not only is it Kurt Wagner's return to the Marvel Universe proper, it also sees Chris Claremont returning to writing the X-Men for the first time since that X-Men Forever thing he did a while ago, and he's back doing, you know, like a mainstream Marvel book for the first time since I don't know, you know what, you've got Wikipedia, look it up for yourself. But yeah, he does a good job. He's a bit wordy still, and a couple of bits of dialogue seemed out of place, like Wolverine in particular, but the story belts along, ably abetted by Todd Nowick on pencils, who will always be the bloke off Young Justice to me, who does a really good job, and all his characterization is spot on, especially for Nightcrawler in particular. And he's helped along by Rachel Rosenberg on colours. I really enjoyed it. I'm not entirely sure what the deal is with the Bamfs, because I didn't get to the end of that whole Amazing X-Men rebirth thing, story, whatever it was. But no, it's a good little book. I'm looking forward to seeing what else they've got cooked up. And now I have to go before I'm caught. Bye.
Anyway, sorry, that was this week's comics.
Slash in.
What happened this week's in comics in the awkward middle bit? Did anything happen?
Rob Liefeld tweeted.
No, no Rob Liefeld, never Rob Liefeld.
Mike Georgiou, artist and writer extraordinaire, turns 21. I believe.
Yes, that's this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. So many happy returns to Mike George. You are now legal to drink in the USA.
I've kind of got it into my head that he and I are probably related somewhere down the line. Because, like,
well, we all are essentially, aren't we? But,
but we're both.
How far back you go?
We're both Greek Cypriots. His surname's Georgiou. Quite a lot of the people in my family. I mean, how likely is it that two Greek people would have the surname Georgiou and not be related?
I bet they. I mean, you probably don't have to go back that many generations, though.
No, no, probably not. Cyprus is very small.
And but such is the interconnected nature of humanity as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying.
Mm.
You're essentially saying that the person you're married with is probably like a distant cousin. You're married with, you're married to.
Yeah,
maybe. We're all not just incesting with each other all the time.
Maybe, if you like. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Also, in comics news.
That was comics news. Mike Georgiou is a powerhouse.
Kickstarter news. Alan Martin, the Tank Girl writer, has teamed up with 5,000 artists. No, I'm not joking. A team of artists, including. Have you heard of a guy called Jamie Hewlett?
I know of his work. He does the gorillas.
That's it. He's teamed up with him and Jim Mahfood and Craig Knowles and Warwick Johnson Cadwell.
I like him.
I like him
He's
too. He's magnificent.
Brilliant in, I think he was in an episode of Extras, maybe.
Yeah.
He was really good in Willow.
He was. I really liked him as the third confused guy on the right in The Gods Must Be Crazy too.
That's a different Warwick. It's confusing because they've both got three names.
Okay.
Warwick the Ewok, I think, was the other one.
No, I don't think he was in that either, was he?
He was Wicket the Ewok.
I know he was.
Anyway, go on. Sorry, Warwick is our friend, Warwick Johnson Cadwell.
It's
he does
beautiful
comics.
Castle.
What is?
Warwick.
Just get on with it. Sorry, I know that was my fault. But 21st, really?
21st Tank Girl. Is a project that has received funding on Kickstarter. So it is a book that we will see in the world. It had a target of £57,000. So Warwick definitely wants to make sure and have a look at how much the other artists are getting paid. Oh, that sounds really wrong, doesn't it? I'm so sorry. That might be the most patronising thing that's ever come out of my mouth.
It's important.
But seriously, get a load of what Hewlett's getting. Make sure you're getting some of the Hewlett money, mate. If we need to come round and we need to intimidate Hewlett.
Well, he works down at our local comic shop.
Like I see that happening. He intimidates my mind just because he scared me as a child so much.
But he works at our local comic shop, so.
What was his the thingy? Island. Oh, I forget it now. With the Easter Island heads.
Hooligan's haircut.
Yeah. Hmm. It still scares me at night. Even now. God, I love Jamie Hewlett. Yeah, it's great.
But he works at a local comic shop.
He does work at a local comic shop. I think the awkward middle bit, especially the news gathering and dissemination, is getting better.
I think so.
Yeah.
That was exciting. I've actually pitched in on that. I did on the first day, I think. So I've got a copy of that coming.
I just feel really bad. I feel like I've been both over-familiar and patronising towards Warwick, and I'd like to issue an official apology.
We'll check in with him. It's fine. I'm sure it's fine.
I'd like to issue an official apology on Nick's behalf. Okay. You let it happen.
No, that's true.
I can't take any real responsibility.
I doubt he has ever had someone hilariously confuse him with Warwick T. Davis either.
That's true.
But
or the castle.
But it's always especially nice when there's a Kickstarter that's based in this country, because then you don't have to pay like 25 quid postage fees or whatever. That's why I've stopped bidding on US stuff.
I did not expect this to go all UKIP. That is really weird.
No, it isn't all UKIP. It's just when you do an American project, when you back an American project, there's always like a 15 quid postage charge to get something to this country.
Or Johnny Foreigner Kickstarter, as you called it earlier. Off mic, conveniently. one of our rare conversations that were off mic.
Can we please have your spotlight? I've had enough of the awkward middle bit.
You can have my spotlight. I'm not talking about a library book this week. This is a book that I received as a birthday gift, or did I buy it with Amazon vouchers as a birthday gift? I forget, it was a month ago now.
I'm not sure. I'm not allowed, he isn't on the clock this time either, so it could go, I think he got angry with me last week.
No, it's just I really love this and I don't want to rush it.
Okay.
As Nick said, the book is Boxers and Saints, and it is by American Chinese author that will become significant, I suspect, in a moment, Jean Luen Yang. Now, Boxers and Saints, I say it's a title. Boxers and Saints, if you're not familiar with it, is actually two books. One follows a young boy called Little Bao. The other one follows a girl called Girl 4. And the book is named Boxers and Saints. It's set during the Boxer Uprising, Boxer Rebellion of the late 19th century in China. So the historical background that it's set against is essentially this was, in very crude terms, was a peasants' uprising against the de facto colonisation, essentially, by European, largely European forces onto the Chinese mainland. It was a time that the open door policy had been adopted. The imperialist sort of European countries were trying to get a foothold in that particular part of the world. You had, the big players really were France, Germany and the UK, all of which you can understand that there'd be a certain sense of paranoia. All had sizable empires at the time, very powerful war machines. And this was a China that, you know, was still quite vulnerable to the neighbours in Japan, to Russia above. They weren't quite the massive industrial giant they are now. And essentially the uprising really sort of saw a great deal of violence in Beijing in particular on both sides. So that's the background. That's the world in which these two young people we first meet in the late part of the 19th century inhabit. I'm going to talk about Little Bao's story, or Little Bo's story first, if that's okay. But both are troubled individuals. Bao lives in a small village in rural Japan. Jesus Christ, he doesn't. It's rural China.
Okay, it's easy to get those two mixed up if you're a racist.
And he's obsessed by the opera, and has a sense of awe. It fills his mind constantly. A foreign devil, a priest, arrives in their village and sets off a chain of events that will see Bao's attitude towards his father and then his destiny change completely. That coupled with some natural disasters that befall the village leaves the village ripe for the visit of a rather enigmatic kung fu master who starts to train the individuals and starts to suggest to them that many of their ills may have been caused by these foreign devils. The book is written in such a way that you can understand why the peasants might feel that way. The injustices that are meted out to them, the fact that the European forces, the Europeans they see are so well protected by those in authority in China, they appear to be able to treat those from the peasant classes in China as second class citizens. If you like, that's strange to. You're a peasant. Of course you're a second-class citizen. Get on with it now.
It's in the name.
Yeah, absolutely. But the book demonstrates, obviously, this air of very arrogant entitlement that's displayed by the Western forces. Bao connects with his kung fu master and goes on a spiritual journey, which sees him eventually become a leader of men and eventually a leader of the Boxer Uprising. And his story really is we see a very innocent, caring and thoughtful young boy led to do terrible and atrocious things to people because he has a sense of piety and he has a sense of righteousness that has been you can understand through his influences and experiences, you can understand where that sense of piety comes from. He becomes part of a group called, now I'm going to get it right, because like many of the things in this book, the group that he leads really existed. They're called the Righteous and Harmonious Fists, and basically they were a group of fighters who believed that they were channeling gods and spirits, ghosts of their forefathers. He feels that he's channeling the first emperor of China and a fire god. And the boxers, this is rooted in reality, the boxers felt that through channeling these spirits, they're impervious to Western weapons. Spoiler, they weren't. But also, it's really interesting because this spirit comes to him in his dreams and leads him to have a conflict. You know, he's being encouraged to do increasingly unspeakable acts to free China, to do the right thing, to lead his people and restore the greatness of China again. Interweaved in this is a love story as well, with a female fighter who becomes the leader of the Red Lanterns. And again, the Red Lanterns really existed, were a real group of female warriors that existed and were part of the Boxer Uprising.
They weren't invented by Geoff Johns.
They most certainly were not written. Okay. No, they're very three-dimensional.
Ouch. Sorry, we let a bit of normal comic fandom negativity sneak in.
I'm sorry. The second book is Saints and follows Girl 4. Who is so-called because she's the fourth female child of her family, but the fourth is considered to be unlucky, so she's considered to be a she-devil. And basically she's very poorly treated by her grandfather, the patriarchal head of the family. Her father's died, unfortunately, at this point. She has herself a very, very troubled existence. She thinks of herself as a devil, so therefore, you know, she acts like it. Before long, she falls into the thrall of a local priest. And she becomes a Christian, and she goes to catechism or classes, Bible classes, essentially. And eventually joins him in a town that has become Christian. Now the fighters in a Bao story call Chinese who've become Christians secondary devils. So rather than the white devils, they're secondary devils. She becomes a secondary devil. Her story really is about a very misguided, very troubled girl who stumbles into something that she identifies with. But unfortunately, all of the figures around her who think that she's doing a positive thing by becoming Christians, all of the Christians, don't realise that it's just negative association.
Mm-hmm.
She sees herself, it's transgressive, she's a devil, it's what she should be doing. If I'm a devil, I should be with the white devils, that's entirely correct. She too, though, has a spirit visitor. And her spirit visitor is Joan of Arc.
Oh.
And it's interesting that she develops, as the story progresses, a similar sense of piety and a similar sense of manifest destiny that Joan of Arc possessed. So, much like Bao, she thinks that her actions are for the betterment of her country. She thinks that the Christians will lead her country to its ultimate destiny, if you were. It's a fascinating study of a very interesting time in Chinese history. I'm aware that the writer was more than aware of the similarities between then and now, and people who fight in a way that seems unpalatable, in a way that seems uncomfortable, in a way that just is wrong to us, but actually because they have this belief, because they have a twisted sense of what's right because of how they've been indoctrinated by a religion or whatever, will carry out awful atrocities, you know, while still actually at core being good people they're able to justify it. And it's a really, really interesting study into how that happens. They meet twice, the two main protagonists, but never for very long. But both manage to have an absolutely profound effect on each other's lives, which is fascinating. It's in terms of how it's written, the two books are almost 500 pages, but it moves along at such an incredible pace. They're sort of like a normal prose novel size, as it were. The pages skip along very quickly. It's the dialogue is very much like the art. It's never overdone. The art is a very, very clear line style. It's kept very simple. Nothing is added that isn't required. So the backgrounds are fantastic, but in a way it feels like a very sparsely populated world they live in. But the uncluttered style that's adopted here makes the story very, very clear, very, very precise. But even though the pencil work isn't intrinsically detailed, the acting, the expressions of the figure work and the expressions on the characters are really clear. You know, it's a really well acted book that feels alive at all times. The dialogue is absolutely perfect, and as I say, it's exactly the same way. It's very sparse, but it always does a job. For want of a more rounded phrase there. You really fall for these characters. Bao is a horrible man, the things he does. He's involved in a couple of like disgusting massacres of innocent people. But you still care about him right until the very last page of the final book, which is an incredible trick to pull off. In my opinion, I had heard that Boxers and Saints was a really good book. Graham Linehan, actually, strangely enough, mentioned that he said he thought it was his, I believe when he'd read it, said it was his favourite graphic novel of last year. I'm inclined to agree with him. It's so beautiful, and presented beautifully as well, as you'd kind of expect these things to be.
It's First Second Books,
it is published by First Second, and you get a hard boxed outer that both of the other books sit next to each other in. But it's just such a magnificent, beautiful piece of work. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Was it because it's two books that come in a cardboard box. Were they always intended to be together, do you know?
I mean, absolutely, yeah. The books were written at the same time. And I think could be read in any either order, possibly. Mm-hmm. I think you probably do want to read Boxers before you read Saints, but...
Well, it's interesting. One's about half the size of the other one.
Saints is considerably shorter. Girl Four's story. Yeah. Whereas Bao's story is a little bit more... complex.
But his sounds more epic, hers sounds more immediate.
Hers is really a journey, is an internal journey. It's very much about a very, very troubled young woman trying to come to terms with something. Another one of her motivations, which I forgot to mention, is critical, really. Mm-hmm. One of her critical motivations, she's never given a real name. She's always called Girl Four.
Yeah, okay.
But through the baptism... she's given a Christian name. Therefore, the Christians are able to give her the one thing that her people and her culture could never give her. And obviously, you know, it's another sort of salient point that makes Christianity so appealing to her. But what I love about it is, as with real life, it very carefully never paints anything in black and white. There's always shades of grey. Yeah, I mean, you know, is written from a very Chinese perspective. The foreign devils aren't really given a very positive account anywhere in the book, really. But then no one is... Bao is our hero, but he's shown to be flawed constantly.
Well, hero is an interesting word. He's the protagonist, isn't he?
He is. No, I think Heroes also appropriate.
All right, okay.
but he's shown to be flawed the whole way through. Whereas the European, the outsiders are always shown to be a destructive and unwanted influence, which, you know, I have to say, you know, they probably were at that time, undoubtedly. But yeah, absolutely fascinating trial, a fascinating time of history. Which I knew little about, and I've read more about over the past few days as a result, and I'm very happy about it. I want to know more about the Boxer Uprising or Rebellion. It's very, very interesting, but it's such a beautiful pair of books.
That sounds excellent. Mm. Really does. That's a really good critical evaluation of it as well. Well, I mean, I assume it is. You might be reading loads into it that isn't. I don't know.
That's fine.
We'll see.
Thank you. But yeah, go and buy it. Go and read it. It's brilliant.
Cool. How much was it?
That's a very good question. It's US, it's $34.99. I think it's around, oh my goodness, I can't even remember how
probably
much
about
it is.
£20, maybe a bit less on Amazon.
It is probably somewhat less on Amazon at the moment, but it's I think actually that's about £18 I paid for it. But it's one of those where it's just that if you're serious about collecting really high quality works of comic book
if you
like collecting really sort of high quality examples of the form, then actually I would suggest that you probably need this in your collection.
So nicely designed,
beautiful.
And what I'll do is I'll put a link to that in the show notes. As always, if you do like the sound of that, and if you do like the sound of that and you decide you want to buy it, if you use the link that we put on the site, we'll get a tiny little kickback from that from Amazon. That'd be really nice.
And for some reason I felt compelled to immediately put the books back in their box.
You want to protect it?
Yeah, forgetting that I'm making a podcast here and I don't want to make lots of noise.
That's okay, it's all colour, apparently, someone keeps saying.
Maybe I should write this shit down like you do, to be honest with you, rather than just sort of rambling my way through it.
That's not... I just literally started doing that 2 weeks ago.
I know, but it's good.
With varied results.
Well,
what's going on with you this week?
Well, talking of Saints, Nick...
Is it a football match?
Yeah, my brother-in-law, bless him, has managed to get hold of some hospitality tickets to go to the football on Saturday. And I don't go to the football very much these days, so I'm very much looking forward to going with him.
Did he kill someone for them?
No, he got them through his work.
Okay, so he definitely killed someone for them.
In a manner of speaking.
I'm going to try and have as quiet a weekend as possible. There is a possibility of exciting party times. It's looking less and less likely that I'll be able to, though. I'm very tired this week. Very tired.
May I say you look it? You've got double bags, mate.
I've got double bags.
You've got double bags.
I normally have one bag.
You've definitely got double bags.
Do they go away?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, that's
so intense.
That's our weeks.
That is our weeks.
Thank you, as always, to our contributor. You're awesome. Thank you, listener. You are wonderful.
We love you.
Thank you, James. That spotlight was amazing.
Thank you, Nick. Your reviews were lovely.
Thank you. We shall be back next week.
Bye-bye.
In our 200... I just made a paper noise. In atu.
I'm sorry, I just made a paper noise. I'm so embarrassed.